Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hello, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet one person at a time. I'm hoping that we learn how to heal the planet more than one person at a time, because I think we all need a lot of healing right now. So excited to bring you a repeat guest onto The Miracle of Healing. So about a year ago, I did an interview with Tom Bunn on his book, Panic Free. And he's got a really interesting story about having been an airline pilot and then really focusing on helping people overcome the fear of flying, which is a very intense panic-based fear. And recently he has written sort of a follow-up book on this topic called Panic Free: Exercises to Calm Pandemic-Related Fear, Anxiety, and Claustrophobia, because he realized that there was a similarity between fear of flying induced panic and COVID virus related panic. And here we are in the middle of this still going, this pandemic is still going on. So I think it's super topical. And I'm so happy that you're here today, Tom.
Thanks, Lisa. It is kind of like being on an airplane that's never going to land and you have no control and no escape.
Or it might crash land. We don't know. It's, yeah. We're not sure about that. So I was saying before we got started that I really learned so much about panic and fear and some misconceptions that I had about panic and fear. So I really got a lot out of your book, Panic Free. I enjoyed it, and I refer a lot of people to that book and to your work. So can you just give us a little bit of background on you and how you came to be an expert in panic?
Well, it happened kind of by accident. We had a pilot at Pan Am. This is going back to 1960. Truman Cummings, Slim Cummings, started a fear of flying course. And he asked me if I would be a volunteer to help him on the graduation flights at the end of the course. I said, nah, Slim, I don't want to be around a bunch of crazy people. He said, come on, take a look. You'll be surprised. And I was, because all of the people in his course were very intelligent and very imaginative. It appears you have to be intelligent to think of a thousand things that can go wrong. And you have to be imaginative enough to make them all seem like they're about to happen. And that's where panic gets going. And on those flights, there was always someone who had a panic attack. And the things that we, in his course, were giving them weren't working too well. It was the idea that if you really know how safe flying is, then you'll be okay. But you still, when you're not in control, that is still a problem, particularly when you can't escape. And the other thing was the breathing exercises. Sure, that they do have a mild calming effect, but it isn't mild enough to deal with the flying situation. So people panicked on all these flights. So that's why I got hooked onto this thing. What can we do to stop the panic?
Yeah, and it's so interesting because a panic is really different from just plain old anxiety or plain old, like, well, I'm nervous, you know, because if you have just plain old anxiety and nervousness, not that that's really fun, but the things you talked about, like breathing or talking logically to yourself, might work, right? But when you get into panic, it's such a level of nervous system arousal that you can't actually talk yourself out of it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. This goes to a concept that we used to call in the fear of flying course, going into your own movie. You know, if you were an adult and you went to a movie with a little kid, one of these movies, Disney movies, where the creatures get lost and they're never going to get back home again, and your 6-year-old kid that you brought to the movies is crying, you're going to sort of give him a hug and say, honey, it's just a movie. So what happens with panic is people get into their own imagination, which starts out, as you said, as anxiety. But if they get into it and believe it's really happening to them, then it becomes more than just a thought. It becomes their reality, and they believe there's no way out. So they're trapped into a situation they can't get out of. They're going to die, they think. So the way I conceptualized it was going into your own movie in your head, and somebody needs to tap you on the shoulder and get you out. And oftentimes you don't have anybody with you to do that. The more technical version of this comes from a psychoanalyst, Peter Feinicke in London, who calls it psychic equivalence. And he explains this in a more developmental way. For example, in the first 3 years of life, a child doesn't have the mental capacity to know the difference between something they're imagining and something that's real.
Right.
But at around age three, he says, the light goes on and you say, oh my goodness, there's something in my mind that doesn't exist. Or there's something out there in the world that I didn't know about. So the equality or the equivalence between what's in the mind, the psyche, and what's real in the world is not an accurate situation. But as the child then at around three learns that there can be something in their mind that's not real, that gives them the freedom to do something wonderful, to pretend. Mm-hmm. And so they can have fun with that. So think about a four-year-old kid who's got good ability to separate imagination and reality, and a two-year-old kid who doesn't. And the four-year-old kid says, let's pretend we're in the jungle and there's lions and tigers. They're going to chase us and eat us. Look, he's after you. He's run. He's going to get you. Well, the two-year-old kid's going to burst into tears because that tiger's real.
Right.
But the four-year-old kid knows that it's not. And what we need to do with panic is not go into that mode that the two-year-old kid is in. And how do we do that? We have to, first of all, understand that that's what we can do. And secondly, how to activate our calming system so that it doesn't take over and make our imagination real.
Right, because there's two sides of this part of the nervous system. There's the side that puts you into arousal, nervous system arousal,
yes,
which would be fight or flight. And then there's the other side that comes in to lower that when we're in safe, in a safe situation. And some people seem to miss that part.
In
their developmental stage, they miss the part that comes in to calm them down.
Well, yeah, they say 60% of us are securely attached and 40% of us aren't as kids. I think you've got to be securely attached in order to get that mental software that activates that calming system.
Yep.
So my guess is about 40% of us have no clue that we're lacking the software or the app that's going to activate that calming system.
Right. And that secure attachment would be during that developmental stage, which I seem to recall from your book is around 18 months old. Is that right?
I think that this thing happens at around 18 months where the child catches on to, hey, whenever I get upset, guess what happens? I start to cry and mom shows up. Mm-hmm. And when she does, I see her face. Ah, I love to see her face. It makes me feel better. And she says, honey, what's the matter? And that feels better. But the icing on the cake is when she picks me up and hugs me.
Right.
So those three things activate the calming system. And now at about age 18 months, the child's mind has developed enough that he starts to see the cause and effect. I cry, she shows up. I cry, I see her face in my imagination, even though she's not there yet. Mm-hmm. So now a program is being developed in the child's mind that getting upset causes him or her to think of mom, and thinking of mom calms me down before mom gets there. Mm. Now, I think what happens in the secure situation, the child gets upset, thinks of mom, calms down, and then mom arrives and says, honey, you were just crying your eyes out. I thought something awful had happened. What's going on? But I'm here. Let me give you a hug anyway. Mm. Then you reinforce the child's program, and it becomes something that's going to work for the child for the rest of their life to calm down. But for the child who mom comes in and says, hey, look, I was busy. I rushed in here thinking that it's the end of the world for you. And guess what? You're totally fine. Stop bothering me. Don't do that. It sounds logical that the mom isn't needed, but she was needed to reinforce the imagination. And so therefore, some of us don't get what we need here in terms of the mental software.
And those people would be prone to panicking.
Yeah, because you don't get the software that turns on the calming system.
And how does this, so you really mastered a way to help people work through this in terms of flying. How do we then translate this to COVID and pandemic?
Well, what was happening with flying is I tried cognitive things and it helped a few people, but not mainly, and stumbled on a couple of things. One is that by linking being on the plane to nursing a child. Caused a person to be immune to stress on the plane.
So that would be dumping a load of oxytocin.
Oxytocin, right. Yeah. So by that association, when you're on the plane and you think of nursing, then you get the oxytocin. For males, it's more useful to think of sexual afterglow or hot sexual encounter. That's when males get the oxytocin.
All right.
Now, that's one half of it. That's to prevent the release of stress hormones. The other half is to activate the calming system. And what I had no idea why this did it, but when people linked flying to saying wedding vows or to getting engaged, that was calming.
Wow.
Now, because of the research done by Stephen Porges, where he discovered that face, voice, and touch signal the parasympathetic nervous system to kick in, but it's got to be someone who's completely accepting. Well, that's the time in a relationship when we're completely accepted. Maybe not 6 months later, but at least when we're getting engaged. So if you go to that moment and link that moment to whether it's flying or elevators or bridges or COVID, we got it.
So that works in any of those panic-inducing things.
Yeah. We just need to turn on the parasympathetic nervous system because it can override the stress.
So how did you come about starting to, do this with COVID people? I think you were, you have a weekly group where it came up?
Every Wednesday night, we do a free counseling session between 10 and 11 so that people in all the U.S. time zones can take part. And it started out as being fear of flying, but it became also about panic, and now it's about COVID. And one of the people in the group, who's a doctor's wife, she said that she has had no calming system her whole life. But because of doing the fear of flying course and reading the panic book, she got it built inside. And she says, I'm just not having a hard time with this COVID situation. And she used to be in book publishing. She said she should get out a quick ebook. I says, okay, sure. I'll get it out by next week. And we laughed about it. But I went ahead and started working on it. And I was able to pull out some things that I had written here and there and put it together and put it out as an ebook. So it's the same things we're talking about, how face, voice, and touch activate the calming system. So when you think about, for example, what if I get exposed? How can I not get exposed? I just don't see any way that I can get through these months without somehow letting one of these little molecules slip through and get me. Well, that thought can trigger enough stress hormones that you say, my God, it's getting me. I've already got it. Or I'm sure that I've got the symptoms, or it's inevitable. So that's how we go into that movie. That's how we go into that psychic equivalence. Right. The worry, which you talked about, there's a big difference between anxiety and panic. The anxiety triggers enough stress hormones that we go into the panic state.
Yeah, once you're in the panic state, it's sort of impossible to come out of that unless you let your body chemistry like regulate back,
Yeah, like, if you just don't keep thinking those anxiety-producing thoughts in maybe 90 seconds, you'll come out of it. But if chances are that the stress hormones are going to keep you thinking about, is your pounding heart a heart attack? Is this thought about getting the virus, I'm sure I'm going to get it, is it really true? So what we want to do is say, okay, so now that you know this happens, what can you do to keep it from happening the next time? What people generally want to do is, what can I do when I'm in the middle of the attack? You can't do much. What you can do is prepare to not have the next
one. Right. Hey, yeah, I find like there's sort of this ramp up. It's sort of like, quick acceleration. Like you're kind of like on the launching pad and then you rocket launch. And if you can get it while you're on the launching pad before you rocket launch, sometimes you can nip it in the bud.
Yeah. And you see, but that requires a certain amount of being able to self-monitor. And a lot of people are not sensitive enough to what's going on, mainly because they think if I'm sensitive enough to what's going on, I'm going to panic. So they kind of try to keep stuff out of their mind. So they may not pick up the onset of panic quick enough to do anything about it.
So how do we do it? What are some steps that we can do?
Yeah, okay. Well, first of all, you got to find somebody in your life who, or doesn't have to be alive even, but somebody who you have known or do know who completely accepts you. Maybe not every moment, but at least sometimes find at least a moment when you're completely accepted. Like I say, wedding vows, for example, does it, or getting engaged. But anyway, if you just find a friend who's easygoing, who accepts people.
Right.
You know, some people are not very accepting, and some people are so accepting we almost don't think that they're very important. It seems like the people who are important to us are the critical ones. So it's easy to overlook the right person. You want just someone who's easygoing. Because when you're with that person, according to Porges' research, what you get from their eyes and the area around their eyes activates the calming system.
Wow.
What you get from the quality of their voice, not necessarily what they say, but the quality of the voice activates the calming system. And then touch. So if you go back to thinking about a brand new baby, that's what mom does intuitively to calm the baby. Her face, her voice quality, because the baby doesn't understand the words, right?
Right.
And the touch activate the calming system of the child. So what we want to do is find somebody who's an adult, not go back to childhood, maybe, because childhood's tough, but just find someone currently in your life or who has been in your life who's accepting. Bring to mind their face, voice, and touch. Then you want to take their face and link it to your concern. You might want to keep the exercise from being too stressful by imagining you have your friend has a photograph of the thing you're worried about. And if a photograph is too stressful, think about a cartoon character worried about catching the virus. And imagine that they have that by their face, whether it's a photograph or cartoon of maybe the cartoon character is worried about getting the boat. Maybe Homer Simpson sits at his nuclear plant, not worried about an explosion, but he's worried about the virus. And so there he is. And so that links to your friend's face. And then you want to imagine the two of you hold the cartoon together, talk about it, just so that your friend's voice gets connected to poor Homer Simpson's situation where he's sure he's going to get the virus. And then while you're talking about it, imagine your friend puts their arm around your waist and gives you an affectionate hug, face, voice, and touch. Now, another thing that can be done, and this goes just to panic issues any place, is for the next few days, every time you start to feel anxiety, imagine that person walks in the room, you see their face, they say hello to you, you hear the voice quality, and they come over and give you a hug. You'll train your mind to pick up the anxiety at a level lower than you can pick up consciously and intervene at a level that's really effective. Face, voice, and touch, activating the calming system.
Wow, that's really great. And was there a little bit of desensitization in that story too, with like imagining them holding a picture of what you're afraid of? Is that part of your process too?
I hadn't thought of it. You know, I originally thought of all with this flying stuff about desensitizing. But the thing is that with flying, there's so much stuff going on that you really can't desensitize to it effectively for most people. So I really started focusing on how we can keep from getting upset with oxytocin on one hand and activate the calming system, face, voice, and touch on the other
hand. All right. So it's basically like all those repetitions are sort of retraining our parasympathetic nervous system to engage in a way that maybe we didn't get when we were little.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you think about people who do high-stress jobs like first responders, they don't think clearly when they're in a life-and-death situation. The way they do their job effectively is by training.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that you have to be trained to be calm under those circumstances in a way.
Well, you're I don't know that you get trained to be calm. You get trained to do something by, there's a part of the brain called unconscious procedural memory, and it's not bothered by stress.
Right.
So if you do something over and over and over again, it gets built in and it'll get done even though you are stressed. For example.
So like soldiers would have to do that
Yeah. That's right. Firefighters, people who work in emergency rooms. A nurse told me she had all these procedures. If A happens, you use procedure A. If B happens, you use procedure B. And she said she felt overloaded. But as soon as she got the ER and was in the situation where she needed, she said the stuff came back. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, as pilots, one of the most serious things that you can get is have a fire in an engine during takeoff.
Wow.
What happens in the cockpit is you get alerted to the fact that you've got a big problem. You know, your amygdala fires off when it finds something abnormal going off. Yep. When the sensor in the engine says, hey, there's an abnormal temperature in the engine, a bell sounds and a big red warning light goes on. You can't miss it. And that's like the amygdala making sure, hey, something's going on. I don't want you to miss it. I'm going to give you stress hormones. Mm-hmm. So right. The first thing we do in the cockpit is push the bell. That silence, push the button that silences the bell. Mm-hmm. So that's like turning the alarm off with the parasympathetic nervous system so that you can think. And what we do then in the cockpit is we can work together. The two pilots are supposed to do this procedure that you trained over and over to do, but you're supposed to do it with the other pilot to make sure there's no mistake.
So there you go. It's sort of almost the same thing, like you've got another person there who's helping you out.
And the other person is helping you out, and you've also got the procedure that's built in. But you see, the thing is, if you got too upset, you might shut down the bad engine. Instead of shutting down the bad engine, you might shut down the good engine. Then you're in big trouble. The good engine shut down and the bad engine's on fire now.
Oh, dear.
So that's why you want to make sure you silence the bell and you do it cool, calm, and collectedly. Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that if you practiced that a lot, you'd probably lower your overall anxiety. I don't know. Do people that don't get that software installed have more generalized anxiety than other people?
Well, I think what happens is people who get the software don't know they have it.
Right.
They just know, water running off the duck's back. Things don't bother me very much.
Yeah.
People who don't have the software don't even know such software exists.
Mm-hmm.
They just say, I get upset. I can't calm down. So guess what? I have to control everything, you included, in a relationship. And if I can't control everything, I want to have a way out. If I don't have a way out, I panic.
Right. Got it.
So let's build in the software.
It's such important work. And I'm really so pleased that you did this workbook, that you got it out quickly, because I do think there, you know, it's a strange time to live in. It's, you know, and I would go through, like, I'm feel better about it now. Like, I think I'm one of the first group of people, like, I got the software, so I'm not a panic-prone person. But even I was feeling it. I go to the supermarket, and it was just because it was so different. There was, like, gaps on the shelves or people in masks. Like, it's such a routine thing to do, and that to see the disruption there, I would be like, wow, like this is like, I remember sort of heavy breathing in the bakery aisle, just going like, wow, you know, the first couple of weeks this was going on. And I just can imagine that there's so many people that would benefit from your book. And I'm wondering if you can, let's show your book. Let's share how people can get in touch with your work and with your book too.
It's a self-published book through Amazon, Panic Free Pandemic Workbook. And mm-hmm. so you can get it as an ebook, or as you can get a paperback, but it'll take a week for them to get it to you if it's paperback.
All right. Awesome. That's so good. And let's see your website too, in case people just want to
get in touch with you. Yeah, fearflying.com is the main website. That's the easiest way to get in touch with me. And if you want to have people know about the Wednesday night counseling session, if you go to, there's the website right in the top, there's tiny little headings. One of them right in the middle is talk and read. If you click on that one, mm-hmm. it'll give you information about the chat and the phone session.
Good. And then, and just for general purposes, your book, Panic Free, you know, that's
the original book.
The original book. So good. I refer that book all the time when I feel, you know, people are really hitting that place of panic and they need help.
Well, there's so much stuff being talked about how not to be stressed, but what's really important, I think, is how to shed it.
Yeah, exactly. And what do we do when we've got it? So thank you so much for being with us today, Tom. I really appreciate you and your work. It's beautiful stuff.
really appreciate being here. Thank you.
Sure. And thank all of you guys for being with us today. You can find me on my website, lisacampion.com. Come by and visit. Usually got something cool happening for you. And I, again, thank you so much for tuning in to us today on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time right here on Empower Radio.